Welcome to the Voodoo Power Podcast. We're going to play some pancakes. We're sitting down today with Monty Yancey. Coach Yancey is the running back and strength and conditioning coach at Raytown South. He was just named the NHS SCA 2024 Missouri Strength Coach of the Year. Yancey has been at Ray South for 3 years. Prior to that, he was a physical education teacher in Houston. Coach Yancey did his internship with the University of Houston and the University of South Carolina. Yancey has an MS in kinesiology and exercise science from the University of Central Missouri and a bachelor's in health and physical education from Tennessee State University. He is RPR certified and a certified strength and conditioning coach through the NSCA. So welcome to the show, Coach.
Coach, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
So you traveled a little bit since Raytown. You made it out to Tennessee, and then your internships look really cool. So when did you decide that this was the avenue you wanted to pursue?
I believe I started teaching just physical education in 2014, 15, around that time. And then the summer of 15, I reached out to Coach Clint Dominic at UMKC. So I said, hey, Coach, I'd like to be an intern. Do you have any, you know, tell me what that process is like? He invited me in with Coach P, and it was great. And that was my very first internship. And then right after that, I was able to get on with University of South Carolina under Coach Dillman and Coach Feely. And then in 2017, I was able to get on with University of Houston with Coach Grace, who was actually my strength coach at Tennessee State. So it kind of worked out.
No, that's really cool. And I mean, all of those programs are great programs. I mean, they've developed a lot of good athletes in both of them. So having the opportunity to go and do that. Now, how eye-opening was that to get involved in those strength and conditioning programs at that level?
It was amazing. Just coming from, you know, collegiate athletics and being on the other side, there was a lot that goes into it. You know, being an athlete, you don't really get a chance to see. They just come in and pretty much do the work. But getting on the other side of it, ton of planning that goes in to make sure everything's fluid for the athletes. And it was just amazing to see from a coach perspective, watch athletes excel from a training perspective. And I just couldn't help it. So I kept going, and I figured the high school setting will work out even better for me.
Now at Raytown South, you were quite an athlete. You were a sprinter. And then I want to say a few honors your senior year before you went on to college. How did you end up at Tennessee State?
Started out at Simpson College, playing football at Simpson College for a couple of years, and then transferred to Tennessee State. I was able to become a walk-on and track, and everything else was just a whirlwind. I love Nashville. Once I got off the plane, I was like, this is really, really nice. This is really nice. I called my mom. I said, hey, I don't think I'm coming home. So I ended up staying there in Nashville, and was able to pursue a degree in exercise science. And once leaving Nashville, coming back to Kansas City, then that's when I kind of got into the teaching realm.
So being from the west side of Missouri like we are, once you cross that Mississippi River, things change a little bit, cultural-wise, people-wise. It's, you know, the country's divided up into different sections of how people are raised and culture and all that. So taking that different culture, not crazy different, but a little bit different, and bringing that experience back to Western Missouri, how has that worked out for you?
I think it's worked out well. Like you said, going to different regions and areas, those athletes was completely different from what I was used to. Wow, you guys are, you know, massive kids, really fast. We have a lot of those athletes here as well, but I think that was my first introduction to kids being linemen, running like linebackers, you know? So it was crazy. But being able to see what I saw out there and learn from Coach Grace and learn from those coaches out there and be able to come back to Kansas City and kind of let our kids know, hey, there's a big place outside of Kansas City. You know, some kids get kind of caught thinking that Kansas City is the world. You know, it's not that big of a place, but there's a whole lot more to see. And I really want those kids to get out and check that out. But just being able to give them bits and pieces of what the world is like was pretty cool.
Yeah, until you see it, you don't really know it exists. It's almost like a movie. It's just a figment of your imagination. And then you get out there, and then, like you said, you start seeing different athletes and what they're doing and what different regions provide, size, speed. It's crazy, I guess, when you get out there, how small it is, but also how big it is. So it had to be an eye-opening experience.
Most definitely.
So coming back, you're back at Raytown South, but when you first come on, the programs, they weren't as good as they are now. So you've got to step in, and you've got to create buy-in with athletes, and you've got to get them on board, even though the scoreboards aren't reflecting what you're trying to teach. How were you able to do that?
I think relationships are the big part, the big piece to all that. Coming in, letting those kids know, like, I sat in the same seats, you know, I walked in the same hallways as you. Your principals were once my principals. That's how long it's been. And some of your teachers have been my teachers. I think that kind of gave me some credibility. And then letting them know, like, hey, it's going to be a journey. It's going to be a process. It's not going to be easy. We're not just going to come out and see a state championship next year. That'd be great. But it didn't work out that way. But there's a process to this. And if you believe in what we're trying to do, you'll end up being successful. And I guess the great leadership from Coach Harris, he came in, and he's an alum of Ray South as well. So he and I had similar ideas as to how, you know, how to bring this program back. And it's working out. It's rolling in the right direction. And I'm just talking about from a football standpoint. We have a lot of other coaches with a lot of other sports who have bought in as well, and just building those relationships with them kind of makes it easier when I start to speak to their athletes. And once those kids come into the weight room and understand the dynamics of what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it, everything is starting to roll pretty smooth.
Now let's flip that question 180. So you've got athletes that are resistant a little. The records are down. They're not bought in. You're trying to program. You're trying to help build these programs. How did you keep yourself heading in the right direction and not questioning, hey, is this going to work?
I mean, that's a great question. There's been plenty of days and evenings I sat in here like, man, I don't know. I don't know. But those kids who kind of were resistant and seeing the record at first, I have to be accepting of adversity as well. I have to make sure I know that it's not just going to turn around quick. I have to be patient. I'm extremely impatient, so I really had to work on that. And I had to explain to the kids, like, hey, if you just believe in what we have going on, then you'll start to see success, and we'll start to give them certain incentives in regards to like our speed training or our reward walls. We have an 800 pound club wall, 1,000 pound club wall, 1,200 pound club wall. And those kids who start to be consistent, you start to see their names pop up on the wall. They come in, they're pretty excited about it, and then you hear them talking to their friends like, you're not up there, but I am. And then it starts to become competitive. And a lot of those kids start to just compete. And we're almost run out of space on the wall now. So we're going to have to find another incentive when it comes to celebrating these kids. I hope that answers your question, but if it didn't, let me know.
Okay, you did touch on something in there, and it's probably the thing coaches struggle with the most, but it's the most important, and that's creating consistency in their athletes. Was that a struggle when you got there? It sounds like it's kind of righted the ship now, but if it was, how were you able to get that more consistent?
Consistency is the key to it all. I've come to learn that within the last couple of years. Like in the beginning, like you said, we were going through that slump. But once I found out, it was because of, you know, kids not having so much consistency. Once they were able to understand, like, we're going to be here every single day. We're going to be the same exact coach every single day. No matter if I'm having a bad day or not, you won't ever really know. You know, I'm going to come in and you're going to hear my voice yelling, come on, let's go. And those kids are just going to be receptive to that. They have become receptive to that. Now, every now and again, you hear those kids mock me. So before I get in the room, they're yelling, "Come on, let's go." And they sound just like me. So I'm pretty excited that they're bought in from that standpoint. It was really hard to be consistent, though. It was really hard because of, you know, the program. And like you said before, I'm kind of questioning, hey, is this going to work the way I need it to work? And sometimes you got to back off on some of it and just break it down. And let's say I can't get everyone running 20 miles an hour in the first, you know, couple weeks. I had to understand, like, hey, we were going 17 miles an hour. That was the standard at that point. And now the standard is bumped up to 20, you know, so which has been a cool deal because those kids are really taking pride in showing up every day, competing every day, and understanding, hey, Coach Yancey, Coach Harris, you know, the whole program, there's a standard that we have to live up to, and we're going to live up to it.
It's hard not to try to start at the top of the pyramid.
Most definitely. Most definitely. But I think it's fun. You know, even though we went through that trying stage in the first couple of years, I don't think I want it any other way because I was a walk-on at Tennessee State, and that walk-on process for me was fun. Like, I like that struggle or that adversity, right? And those kids have to be strong enough to understand, like, hey, we're going to go through some adverse situations, but guess who's right here next to you every single time? This coaching staff is right here next to you. We're going to guide you through this. We're not just going to throw you out there and hope you know how to swim. We're going to teach you everything you need to know, so trust us and go through this process with us.
Now, we kind of touched on it a little bit ago, and then you hit on it there, but helping kids to understand the world is really big, but you can go tackle it if you're willing to put up with some adversity and put out some effort. How do you kind of get that message across that Raytown's not the center of the universe?
I think those kids asked me more about, hey, what was it like when you were here? Or why did you come back? Or, you know, what's it like in Tennessee? And then those questions start to form deeper conversations. And it's really cool to explain to the kids, like, hey, man, you can get out of here as well. You can get out of Raytown South. You graduate Raytown South and see the world for what it is. And let me help you find a vehicle to get out, which will be athletics. I think every kid in this school, athletics or academics, try to promote both at the same time. But I think every kid in school kind of gets upset with me because I ask every one of them, like, hey, why don't you play a sport? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you join this club or go to the chess club or go to robotics or, you know, try out for track? And at first they kind of looked at me with an annoying and irritating look, but they started to understand. I think I got a message the other day, like, thanks for always, you know, promoting our school. Thanks for always trying to get us to do something, because you see a lot of kids who just walk the hallways. I'm like, man, I don't think they know they should get involved. And then once I see them, I'm definitely going to let them know, like, hey, you should do X, Y, and Z, or just try X, Y, and Z. You never know until you try. And it's okay to fail. I think our kids, sometimes they're afraid to fail, and that's why they don't try. But when they see me, I come in the weight room and you know, try to get them going. Every now and again, I stutter over some words or I mess up when I'm explaining what we're doing today. And I'm like, man, come on, Yancey. I messed up. And it happens, you know? So it's okay if you don't get this exercise right off the bat or get this movement right off the bat, but you keep trying. And I'm not going to give you 100 cues on how to do it right. I'm going to explain it. Then I'm going to let you explore that movement to see if you kind of figure it out yourself.
Now, you were talking about there just a second ago, is you're pushing kids to join clubs and get involved, whether that be academics, athletics, trades, whatever that might be. Do you see an increase in good culture?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think our kids have bought into what we offer as an all-around school. I think it's made the whole school community a lot more positive. When I came in, obviously we were coming off that COVID year, so things were kind of down and people were just trying to figure it out. You know, people still trying to stay away from one another because things are going around. But once kids were motivated to get involved, you start to see the children take more pride in being on Raytown South Park. And I think you might hear somebody yell, one of the football players yell down the hallway, it's a great day to be a Cardinal. When they see me walking down the hallway or see another coach walking down the hallway. And that just, you know, makes me smile a little bit because it lets me know that, hey, we're doing something right. And they're taking pride and taking ownership of being part of the school.
Now, you mentioned it there a little bit, you know, kind of when you got there, and then as you've been creating what you guys at Raytown South have been creating, overcoming apathy and getting kids to try. It's okay to fail, but at least try. How are you able to get the mindset switched on that?
When we began, a lot of those kids were, like I said, were afraid to try exercises. They were afraid to go to the weight room because the expectation for them to get, you know, not everybody's going to squat at a certain depth, but to try to get them there. And the first thing they want to do when they get to the weight room is throw 315 pounds on the bar. Like, no, my man, that's not going to work like that. Let's start from a beginner's standpoint, and then we'll work our way up. I try to explain to all the kids, like, hey, you're going to get strong, and it's just not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen right now. There's a process to it, and we're going to progressively get stronger if you just trust me. And, you know, they kind of look at you crazy, and then they kind of nod their head like, I trust you. Let's get it going. And then once they were able to try that, just from a lifting standpoint, you start to see the confidence grow in those kids. You start to see their bodies change. And then once their bodies changed, I think there was no holding back, really. They couldn't stay out of the mirror. You know, the sleeveless shirts start coming out and crazy things like that. And then you start to see them in the hallway and how they interact with others in the hallway. We try to make sure that these kids are positive role models. Whether it be just on our sports team, whether they be in a hallway, whether they be in a classroom, whether they be in a grocery store, you know, we want those kids to always represent, you know, their parents, you know, be a really good example of how their parents raised them, but also represent Raytown South, because when they go out, you know, they might be wearing a Ray South hoodie, and you want them to say, hey, I went to Raytown South, be proud to say I went to Raytown South, and you're being a good role model. So once those kids are walking in the hallway, they start building confidence and interacting with other students are like, hey, I see their bodies change. I see how the weight room is treating them. And they start to come into the weight room as well. I think that first year we were trying to pull kids into the weight room. And after that, it was just like a wait list, you know, girls and guys. They, in the beginning, we had about 5 girls total. And now we have roughly around 5 girls per class. So it's pretty cool.
Now, me and you had talked about it just a little bit before, but in doing this, now the community is starting to see a change in athletes. But how do you get the community bought in on what you're doing so that they want to send their sons and daughters to you and see the improvements?
We've put in a lot of time trying to reach out to the community, trying to make sure we host camps and clinics. We also, the goal when we first came in was like, hey, let's get down to the middle school to get these middle schoolers in here and teach them how to move. And we were able to do that. That was our, you know, 4-year plan, but we were able to do that a whole lot sooner than that. So we'll go down to the middle school and converse with those kids and, you know, converse with their parents about the programs that we'll have after school. And we normally dedicate like a certain time frame for those middle school kids to come up. And we teach them just normal movement. We're not asking them. We make sure the parents know we're not trying to crush them with weight, because that's one of the biggest things. Our parents come in and they're thinking, hey, he's trying to, you know, throw 315 pounds on his kid's back and he's only 90 pounds. Like, no, ma'am. Definitely not trying to do that. We're going to take care of them and just teach them basic movement patterns. And at that point in time, those kids really start to enjoy that aspect of coming up to the high school, first of all, and then getting to see some of the older kids there. Some of the older kids are still maybe finishing up their lifts and they're interacting with those younger student athletes. We have a kid here who's going to be going to Iowa State here in the fall. Phenomenal person. So when those middle school kids come up and see him, I want to look like that. I want to be like that kid. And the way he presents himself, he's a phenomenal person. So those kids just naturally gravitate toward him. And we want that in our program. We want our program to be based on being a great person, being a really good athlete, but being more of a great person. And that's exactly what we've come to find within the last couple of years. Eventually, we're looking to get down to the elementary level and get those elementary kids in as well. I was a PE teacher. Well, I am a PE teacher, but I was an elementary PE teacher. I taught pre-K through everything pretty much, but pre-K through five. And when I did that, I found that adding certain, you know, squat movement patterns or push-up patterns, even though you're supposed to, you know, teach those kids those things, not everybody does. So being able to get those kids to move the right way, so when they do get to middle school, they find some success. And once they transition from middle school to high school, everything has already been established.
Now, taking that down to the middle school level, like you were talking about, where do you find you spend your most of your time? Improving body movement? I mean, or are your athletes at that level moving pretty good and you can start taking off from there?
A nice mixture of both. We have some kids who definitely, you know, just need the understanding of their bodies. You know, let's break everything down. Let's learn how to squat. We're going to do some tempo squats or some push play squats, just so that way you understand what that pattern looks like, how to sit in that pattern, and how to correct yourself. And it doesn't take long for those middle school kids to kind of grasp that and then progress from, you know, a push play squat to a goblet squat and things like that. Now, those kids are kind of advanced. You know, they pick it up really, really quick. We still try to slow them down just a little bit just to make sure everything is accurate. And then when we're watching them move, you see them correct themselves really quick. Like I said, if they're moving from push play squat to a goblet squat and something's off or they're, you know, they're getting a little bit of that valgus and their knees cave in and things like that, you see them correct. I don't have to say much of anything. I just kind of look at them. They fix it. They look at me, give me a thumbs up and kind of keep going. And then we're able to kind of move them to whether it be a barbell squat, with extremely lightweight, but still make sure we're going through that entire movement pattern. So the whole goal throughout that middle school phase is just teaching and those kids learning their bodies, because a lot of them are going to be, you know, some of them are going to be 4'2", some of them are going to be 5'7", and then that freshman year, they might end up being 6'3", something crazy. So then you got to reteach how to navigate their body all over again because of that large increase in growth. But it's been fun. I really enjoy having those middle schoolers up here, and we all do. It's just the simple fact that when those parents see those kids enjoying it, I think that's what makes it even better. You know, I think that's what makes the buy-in even better and helps improve our athletics as a whole, whether it be football, basketball, wrestling, you know, baseball, softball. We welcome all of them up here. And over the last 3 years, we've seen a continued growth of middle school athletes.
Now, getting the district to buy into what you're trying with your middle school mixed with your high school and even maybe touching into the elementary, was that a pretty quick sell for them, or did it take a little bit of convincing?
I think it was pretty quick because strength and conditioning itself was fairly, I can't say fairly new, but the way we were presenting it seemed like, hey, that might work, you know, and we're willing to try that. And again, our leadership was great about it. The middle school's principals and leadership was really great about pushing those kids up, like, hey, yeah, go try it. And once they did, the parents are really bought into it. And it's been a fun ride so far. I just can't wait to see the continued growth and process of it all. I'm excited about those middle school and elementary kids coming up.
Now, I'm just thinking in my head what a group of middle school looks like, and you're dealing with all sorts of body types. You're dealing with an athlete that's really skinny to one that hasn't left the couch in quite a while. And you have to navigate that. So nutrition wise, you're trying to teach this one kid how to eat, but you're trying to teach another kid how to eat better.
Right.
How do you implement that?
From a nutrition standpoint, we understand like everybody's households are different. We try to make sure we give them pretty much the basics of it all. This is what your plate should look like. You know, they go all the way back to that My Plate system that they use in the elementary schools. Back then, the kids probably didn't pay any attention to it. But then when we bring it back, it starts to make sense because we relate it to athletics and how, you know, this athlete over here looks this way. He's able to perform this way, or she's able to perform this way because of what she puts inside her body. And you try to, you know, tell those kids you don't put bad things inside of your body because you can't perform the way we need you to perform, or perform the way you want to perform. So we want to make sure we explain to them, hey, you need this many carbs, or carbs that look like this, or fruits and vegetables, proteins and things. And we give them a diagram. There's actually a couple of diagrams in the weight room. We kind of walk them through there and show them what it should look like for those different training days. Now, are they going to do it all the time? No, not by any means, but at least they have a picture of what we're looking for and how to be a better athlete, how to fuel their bodies for what we need. I think our staff does a phenomenal job of, excuse me, our cafeteria staff does a phenomenal job of supporting us. Like, I mean, we're able to get, you know, share those chocolate milks with those kids because of the after school program that's provided here. I think those snack packs give you like 500 calories worth, which is great right after a training session. You know, we try to make sure those kids understand how you need to put some in your body after we train. Bring some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We've tried to provide some peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and things like that. Now, that may not be an option for everybody. That's perfectly fine. They go grab a snack pack, grab some chocolate milk, and boom. Now they have 500 to 700 calories going home, about to eat dinner. And then slowly, if they're consistent, they start to see their bodies start to change in the right way based off of our training. And those middle school athletes are starting to understand that as well. I think it's our high school athletes who are extremely bought in. I think at the end of every session, my phrase is sleep, eat, and hydrate. And again, those kids mock me, so they're saying it before I get a chance to say it. They know what the standard is, and they've been extremely consistent to where some of those kids, I wouldn't even recognize them, you know, from their freshman to junior year now. It's pretty cool to see.
It seems like with the more improvements in body type and athletic ability, you get more of those nutrition questions. So you have to be prepared because they're, you know, they're coming. So you've got to get, I guess, everybody on the staff aware of, hey, we need to be up on this. Where did you guys go to kind of research where you wanted to be with nutrition?
There were tons of clinics, you know, especially during that COVID time. I think it was Coach Ryan Jackson. I believe he was at SMU at that time. He had a clinic, and he was the nutrition for SMU. He might be at TCU now, I believe. I just basically reached out to him and tried to get information on how they did it there and tailored it to where how it could work for our athletes. So when those questions do come up, I'm either going to reach out to him, you know, I'm either going to reach out to our nutrition services here. And I believe our nutrition service is willing to come out and talk to the kids as well, which is also pretty cool because they, you know, they're eating in the cafeteria every day. They want to know what should be put on their plate. And for the most part, they put the right things on their plate. Now, when they go out, you know, to dinner or go out to lunch with their friends, what should they grab? That's also kind of been explained to them from a dumbed down standpoint. Like, hey, you don't want to. We're going to perform in an hour. Like, you have a game in an hour, right? You don't want to go get a Whopper and load yourself up and just be feeling sluggish when you're trying to perform, right? So we talk about eating the night before, hydrating the night before, hydrating throughout the day, and just making sure you're ready, you're primed, you're ready to go to perform at a very high level if we're playing a game the next day.
you brought up something that was pretty interesting in there, and you were talking about reaching out to coaches and getting help. And that's one thing. Before I even started the podcast, I had questions in the gym and I had questions on nutrition, and I would just email coaches and see who would respond. And, you know, it was crazy. The big time strength coaches that would take time to answer my emails. They don't know me. They don't know anything about me, but, University of Iowa, University of Nebraska, a lot of those guys helped me tremendously just because they wanted to give back. So with what you're saying there, yeah, if you reach out to a coach, more than likely they're going to get back with you and help you out.
100%. Found some great coaches who were able to, you know, invite me in so I could actually see it in person, be able to, you know, bring some stuff back. You know, shout out to Coach Carroll at K-State and his staff. And it's great just being able to, like you said, reach out to those coaches and have that level of vulnerability, because you're like, hey, are they going to respond back to me, or are they going to try to big time me? But again, more than 90% of the time, those coaches are like, yeah, hey, come in and check us out.
So building on to that, growing in maturity, when did you learn to put yourself out there and at least try yourself? You're trying to get your students to try, but when did you say it's okay for me to throw myself out there and see what happens?
Man, that's a great question, because I still battle that to this day. Just learning how to get comfortable being uncomfortable is a constant challenge for me. Again, like you said, I tell my kids that every day, and I have to live my creed, right? I have to make sure I'm okay with putting myself out there and not exactly feeling like, yeah, man, I'm gonna crush this, but I'm gonna give it my best. And if I fail, I'm definitely gonna get up and try it again, and try as many times as I need to make sure I'm successful. But at the end of the day, I think those kids, they see that and they notice that. They know the small things. They know if I mess up. But I don't sit down and pout, hey, man, I just messed this up, man. I'm gonna scratch that. I messed up, man. And they're like, Coach, man, I see you, man. Like, I know you messed up. It's all good. And I keep going. And for the most part, those kids go along with it. And they know I'm okay with them messing. As long as you're going 100 miles an hour, you might mess up. I'll let you know, hey, man, we missed X, Y, and Z. Let's fix it. And then we start focusing on those details and get everything corrected and eliminate as many mistakes as possible. And then from my standpoint, when it came to reaching out to coaches for help, I mean, the first couple of times I was extremely nervous. Man, I don't know how they're going to respond. I don't know if this is going to work. But after about five times, man, the worst they can say is no. You know, the worst they can say is no. So I reach out to as many coaches as I need to try to gain a little bit more knowledge to bring back and help our student athletes to become extremely successful.
It seemed it took me a long time. You know, it takes a lot of maturity to realize you only get one crack at this thing. And you don't want to be sitting on your rocking chair at the end of your life thinking, man, if I just would have tried, what would have happened?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Oh, was that phrase? I don't want to be a shoulda, woulda, coulda person. I'm going to go ahead and do it. And if I mess up, I try.
Now, talking to you a little bit, your weight room is kind of based on a 5-3-1. You've got some other aspects that are in there that you mix it around with. Obviously, you did some great internships, so you've got some philosophies from different spots. But what kind of helped you land on the 5-3-1? I mean, I'm a 5-3-1 geek. Jim Windler, he's just a great person to talk to. I love how versatile the system is. But what made you pick it?
I felt like it was pretty easy to implement for our athletes. When I was in Houston, it was easier to implement, like, kind of use the tier system a little bit in Houston as well when I was coaching out there. And then moving here, right now in that 5-3-1 phase, a lot of our athletes are able to utilize it even when they're in season. That's the crazy part. Like, I'm able to utilize it in season and kind of do some tweaks here and there just to make sure those kids are still ready to perform when they need to. But it's been pretty easy to implement from a general standpoint, and those kids are receptive to it.
Yeah, and you know, I've talked to Joe Ken and I got his book, and I enjoy the tier system. You know, what he's come up with is amazing, but I always find myself back at the 5-3-1 and what it can do. Now, you could take a 5-3-1 and put it in a tier with your accessories. I'm sure you could do all that stuff, but It just depends how deep you want to go and what you're wanting out of your athletes. But in saying that, what kind of in-season gains are you seeing with what you're doing?
So, yeah, our kids are, well, our programming is kind of a mix of that tier and 5-3-1, but a lot of our kids are starting to gain. I say the in-season kids are starting to see a lot more development and power when it comes to, like, our baseball kids right now. I think last year, I'm not just basing off of home runs, but it's easier to just say, hey, man, you got a little more power when it comes to your swing. I think he's hit one last year, and he cranked one in the first game this year. And I'm not attributing anything to the programming, but it also makes me think, like, hey, this kid is displaying what we're looking for. He comes in the weight room, and he does exactly what he needs to do. That may be modified just based off if they got a game today. You know, we dial it back just a little bit, a couple percent back, or set wise. But he comes in and he trains his butt off. And he goes out and performs at a really, really high level. So it's kind of good to see how that relates to those kids who are in season. Last year, I was kind of nervous on using it while they were in season. I'm like, man, I don't want to screw things up. I don't want to mess it up. But again, it's really hard to just say, hey, we're going to use it because he went out and hit a home run his very first game. His first at bat, but I'm kind of leaning toward that direction.
Now, talking about baseball, you guys have some really nice facilities. I know it's been a few years now, but the Adrian boys went up there and played St. Michael's for a district game on your guys' field, and it was turf. It was nice. It was a great setting to have baseball.
Most definitely. It's the admin here and the district did a great job. It's a really nice facility. Wasn't here when I was here by any means. I remember when, you know, the football field was still just dirt. So it's really nice to have that type of facility. Those kids are really appreciative of it. And then you start to see a lot of other teams come in and you know, practice or play on that field. And it's nice to have that in the community and another bright spot in the community. So with our program and the facilities all matching up, I mean, you can't do anything but succeed, right?
Now, building on to what you're doing in the weight room, what's your sprinting look like? What are you doing? Are you doing flying 10s? You doing long build-ups, short build-ups? You intermixing them? How are you building fast athletes?
All right. So we have incorporated flying 10s. You know, I dove into the feed the cast philosophy as well. But in the very beginning, we always start short, you know, just to make sure we keep those athletes safe. So we don't want them just jumping out there and just knock it out 40. So we always start, you know, accelerations at 1 to 10 range. And then we bump it up each week. So now we're getting to 20 and things like that. But we've been blessed to have Titan, some Titan sensors and be able to track those kids miles per hour and peak acceleration, things like that. So with that, let's say just from a summer standpoint, starting with our acceleration on Monday. Tuesday would be our change of direction. Wednesday is normally not necessarily an off day, but an active recovery day in a sense. So then we come back Thursday and we'll have a max velocity day. We start to spread it out and have those flying teams, whether it be a 5-yard lead, a 10-yard or 20-plus-yard lead in. And then we'll get back to change direction on that Friday. We switch that around. That Thursday and Friday around because a lot of the kids were coming in on Friday and they were pretty toasted from the week. Learned that, I think it was last summer. We came in that Friday and it was just like, man, what's going on? These numbers aren't adding up and trying to figure out why they just look so dead and tired. Not to mention it's the summertime and kids have their minds on other things going on. But once we switched it up, we started to notice the numbers start to spike back up and start to get what we wanted to see. And accelerations had started to improve as well, which was really great, you know, heading into those camp seasons and just trying to help those kids improve on their 40 times, improve on their 5-10-5, so that way they can kind of stand out at these camps, which kind of led into our season. We came to the season, I want to say we had, off the top of my head, I think we had like 20 kids over 19, 20 miles an hour. We had two kids that were at 22 miles an hour. And again, off the top of my head, I'm still trying, I would say around six kids in the 21 mile per hour range, which was pretty awesome. And then once, you know, they got in game and they were in the Titan, you still could see those kids perform in 21s in game. Man, we're doing something all right.
Yeah. So tracking that, obviously you're set up for a little bit of auto regulation. So you can see when your kids are getting beat up and then be willing to make the adjustment and not just say, well, they just need to be conditioned better. You as a coaching staff kind of took the bull by the horns and said, hey, let's make some changes and see what we can do.
Most definitely. Our conditioning really comes down to us sprinting. You know, we don't really go gasser after gasser. Now it's needed every now and again. And it can definitely be programmed if that's what you so choose, but we don't condition, you know, hours upon hours because it doesn't correlate to what we're actually looking for as far as athleticism and what we're looking for in the game. It doesn't relate to how fast we want these kids to move in game, whether it be, you know, football. We want those kids to be very fast, be able to change direction. So I've dove into some Tony Villani stuff as far as his game speed and how he's able to get those athletes, his pro athletes, extremely fast, but still be able to have a controlled movement patterns. So we're trying to get to that point, you know, still trying to get these kids really fast. That's the main goal. And then, you know, incorporate those game speed patterns in there.
Now, I told you I'm a 5-3-1 geek, and obviously you like it or you wouldn't run it. I talked to Ross Garner down in Cleburne quite a bit, and then every once in a while I'll hit Joe Stokowski up, and we may have actually talked about it a little bit on the podcast with Stokowski. I can't remember, but the ideology of 5-3-1 for sprinters or for flying 10s to program. I don't know if you've ever thought about anything like that, but in my mind, you could have your 5-week, which is an ideology. It would be hard to do sets and reps, so you just have to take the heart of 5-3-1 and put it into sprinting. So like your 5-week, maybe long buildups, that's kind of what I've been trying, you know, the 15, 20 yard buildups. Your 3 weeks, you're starting to drop into your 10 yard buildups. And then your 1 week would be like 5 yard buildups into a flying 10. And I always kind of wondered what that would look like after a long period of time. So this summer, I'm hoping to try that out a little bit more. You ever thought about anything like that?
Oh, that's big time. I'd love to hear, you know, how that worked for you. That was my first time hearing about that. So that's pretty awesome. I'm definitely going to hit you up about that and try to figure out how's it progressing for you. From our standpoint, we do a lot of flying teams from the 5 into the flying 10, 10 to flying 10, 20 plus. We do a lot of curve and linear speed as well. Just being able to track how those kids can change direction and still keep at a top speed. So when we do program those high velocity days, we want to make sure when we're in the weight room, we're also accounting for that as well. We're not trying to smoke the kid out, and then we get basically when we get to that next training day, he or she can't perform on that next training day. So we're definitely we're definitely trying to keep that in mind. That's why we have it on our acceleration days on Monday. They come in pretty fresh. We can knock out quite a few sets of reps of that and still get in weight room and be successful on that hang clean day, because normally our Mondays would be like a hang clean type day. And then our Tuesdays would be more so of a bench press day. I think I could be confusing myself because we switched it up quite a few times, but I know for sure on that Friday, it would more so be like a squat day. So again, we switched it up a couple times. Just got to make sure I get it right. But I know Monday, hang clean for sure. Then we go bench press. Then we have incline. Then we have squat. Just depending on how these kids look. Sometimes we have to switch those days up because sometimes they come in and they're really tired, whether it be from a long week or, you know, a kid coming off a vacation. We just try to make sure we accommodate the programming to the kid. Now, we don't completely switch it all up every time, but if we notice a trend going on and those kids aren't performing the way we need them to perform, then we'll kind of sit back and try to adjust some things so that way the kid can perform at a high level.
Okay, so in that little bit right there, I come up with about three or four questions. So you bear with me while I get through them. But let's go back to what you talked about. You do some curve sprinting. Do you find that that helps in linear acceleration? That's kind of something I've been tinkering around with here. If a kid can stay in a pretty good curve, it seems like when you put them on a line, they accelerate better. I don't know if you've noticed that or not.
Well, some of our top kids, let's see, those kids are running, you know, linear around high 21s, that 22 range. When it comes to the curve sprints, we've had a kid hit like 20 on that curve sprint. So it's like, I'm trying to dabble into that myself even more, but I feel like those kids who are successful at hitting that high 20 range are, once they lead into that straight line, that linear phase of the sprint, then yes, they do have a little bit more acceleration.
I was jacking around here the other day and I put some chains on some kids and then had them run with chains around a hoop. Now, it looked ugly. I'm not going to sell you that it looked amazing, but it seemed like that carried over very well to their linear acceleration phase. So that's just something I've been starting to ask coaches about, if it's something that they've noticed and if I'm maybe down the right rabbit trail.
That's nice. I hadn't put any chains going in a curvilinear phase. I mean, linear, yeah, but that's pretty nice. That's pretty nice. And you said you just started that?
Yeah, I had a kid come in, right, and he was a long jumper, and he didn't tell me he was long jumping. He told me nothing. He just showed up. He'd been coming to the gym quite a while, and he's like, "Hey, you think you can help me with my long jumping?" And I'm like, "Well, we can try. I don't know much about it." And he goes, "Well, I jumped this week." And I'm like, "Man, I don't know that I can help you in a week." I said, "The only thing I can maybe see that we could improve without me screwing you up would be your acceleration phase going in to your sprint, to your jump." And so for whatever reason, thinking about jumpers and thinking about that good long acceleration phase they take, I'm like, I wonder what I could do to help that without screwing him up. And that's where the chains come in. Now, they really have to stay outside that circle or they'll drag the chain through the hoop. So you got to give them time to understand that. But it seems like, you know, you got a good acceleration in and then they're fighting that curve. So that keeps them down. And then they've got a good acceleration out, and then the chains give them something to lean into, so you get a little bit better body position in theory. Now, right. whether that holds true, I have to do a little more practicing, but I liked what I saw. And like I said, it wasn't clean, but I like where it could end up. Now, going back to your 5-3-1, you were talking about your lifts. You have your clean, your bench, you do an incline, and then you do your squat. Now, do you switch those up? So let's say your clean's a 5-week, your bench is a 3-week, your squat's a 1-week, kind of like a cube, or is everything a 5-week, everything, are they all together, I guess?
They're all together. So we'll keep everything together. We'll also add our shoulder press in there. Normally I do the shoulder press typically on that squat day. Just add that in, because like I said, it's like a quasi-tier system, so we add that in on that other tier. But yeah, for the most part, we keep it in that 5-week range. We also add those, I think I spoke on it previously, but like hang clean, bench press, then we have that off day in the middle, then we're going to incline, and then we'll go squat. Yeah, we're still going all the way through. So we're going 5-3, and then, you know, finishing up the rest of it. But we add our shoulder press on. I'm walking myself through it as I'm saying it, so I'm still trying to figure out. We add that shoulder press in on that squat day as well, in that next tier, because when we're in class, we're only using, I mean, it's kind of hard because we only have roughly around, let's say, 36 minutes to get as much work in as we can. Our kids have been pretty efficient with coming in, understanding, hey, this is what the expectation, this is what's program for today. Let's get this warm up in and let's get going. And most of the time, those kids are able to get to maybe like one or two supplemental movements. but they, I mean, they're really crushing it when it comes to that first two tiers.
Now, what do your sprints look like on the one day or the one week? So you've taken all of your lifts to, you know, training max, and you're pushing 95% or whatever perceived training max. How do your sprints look that week? Do they drop? Do they go up? The taxing on the CNS, are you seeing a correlation between the two, or is it working out well?
I've noticed that when we do sprint, we try to make sure we sprint on that more so that block day. So we'll have a Monday, a Tuesday, a Thursday, and Friday with the kids. So they'll have that off day in between. And then we'll have a Monday, a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So they'll have that off day in between there, whether it be Tuesday or Wednesday. And normally on that longer day, we will sprint. I hadn't seen any decreases as far as in their numbers or anything like that. But I think that gives us, because if we're sprinting that one day, we try to sprint twice a week. So if we're sprinting on that block day, it's going to be, we'll have more reps. Like we'll be able to get like 3 reps in on those flying 10s or those curved linear sprints. And then on that Friday, we may only be able to get like 2 reps in, just because the class moves so fast on that non-block day. But with that being said, I hadn't seen much of a difference as far as burning those kids out and their sprint numbers. Now, if we do notice like, hey, man, on your second rep, you're dropping below like 90% of your max, then I'm like, you really don't have to do that last. You know, I give them that option. Most of the kids are really competitive, so they try to perform that last rep. But once I see that drop, then I know, hey, something's off, or you're just kind of tired from what's going on throughout the week.
Way back in the podcast, you were talking about creating opportunities for your students, whether at athletic levels or club levels. And in doing that, you guys started a powerlifting team.
There you go.
So the crash course in powerlifting, how has that been?
The crash course in powerlifting has been wild. it's been fun, but I guess learning the aspects of powerlifting, you know, it's not just like, hey, man, we go in there, we just go throw weight around, and getting those kids to understand that too. There's a lot that goes into that. It was our first year with our powerlifting team, and it was kind of established by a student, which was cool, because she went to admin and was like, hey, we need to have a powerlifting team. She kept talking to us about it. I guess we were kind of moving a little too slow because we had other things going on. But, you know, once she came back, like, let's do this, we were on board. And a lot of those kids who are already in our weight training class, we go through those. Their programming might be tailored just a little bit, but not much as far as preparing for those powerlifting meets. We've only had like 2 meets this past season, but those kids were really successful. They were really excited. I think it was just more so getting them out there, giving them another avenue to participate and compete. Some of our kids aren't in, you know, a regular sport, but they love working out in the weight room. So they, you know, joined the team and was able to get out and compete with others and talk with other, you know, athletes and just converse and kind of make friends from that standpoint. So hopefully next year we get a couple more kids, and throughout that time, I'm going to dive in a little more and try to learn a little bit more about the ins and outs of powerlifting. I do understand that you're a powerlifting coach, right?
Loosely, yes. I enjoy it. I know some really good powerlifting coaches that I'm sure would be more than happy to help you as well.
Awesome. So I'll be reaching out to you a little more often.
In saying that, you know, the powerlifting in the metro, what's that like? In my mind, now maybe I'm being a little stereotypical, I don't know, but in my mind, I picture schools like Kearney and Liberty and that northern North Kansas City, North Metro. I picture that those schools being really strong. Yeah. I don't know how that looks.
Yeah, those schools are really strong. We just had a powerlifting meet at Kearney, I want to say last weekend or weekend before that. Our kids went out there and they were able to compete really, really well with those schools. Our junior boys came out in second place, so they did a really good job. again, I think it's just our numbers. We have really low numbers, but they went out and they were able to compete. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier in the podcast, as far as our kids, you know, having a certain level of discomfort and trying something new. Now they're like, hey, I'm going to try it. And if I fail, I fail. If I succeed, awesome, but I'm going to try it. And that's what they actually went out there and did. And I just so happened to be there. I'm like, man, this is nice. This is really cool. But I mean, teaching those kids the small intricacies of just basic lifting and then getting them out there to learn and compete against other kids was a pretty awesome endeavor.
Now the struggles of bringing a program up from the ground. What are some of the things that you've ran into that could maybe help another coach that's in your position?
Learning where the meets are, like trying to find where to go. Because it's not a MSHA sanctioned like sport. So really trying to reach out and find those meets and when they're going to be and where they're going to be. Fortunately enough for Coach Harris, man, our head football coach, head strength coach, great guy, man. He's always lead me in the right direction. So I truly appreciate him. He's able to kind of help me along that process. And finding those meets to get those kids out there. A lot of our kids are in multi-sport athletes. So some of our kids are in, you know, right now, some of them are in track. They were in wrestling, and other fall sports like, you know, I mean, winter sports, basketball, things like that. Those kids still want to come out and compete. So trying to find a way to get them out there to, you know, showcase their skills is something I'm also working on, like how not to interrupt their current main sport for powerlifting. So if you're new to it and you want to get into it and just jump in there. that's the most I can say is just jump in there and you'll kind of learn, reach out to as many coaches as you can. Like I said, I'm going to be reaching out to you a little more often. And I'm going to reach out to some other coaches and try to figure out what's the best plan of action to help grow our program and to make sure that our program doesn't conflict with the other winter, spring sports.
Now, going into football, you're a running backs coach. I looked at your guys' schedule, and this year they were at home, but teams like Carthage, Neosho, that's a heck of a travel. So getting your guys ready for a 3-hour bus ride down to the middle of nowhere, Missouri, and then bringing them back, what does that look like for you?
Well, getting our athletes to understand, hey, no matter where we go, the standard is going to be the standard. We're going to be consistent in how we train, consistent in the intensity of the game and how we attack the game. Whether we have to drive and sit on that 3-hour ride, hopefully we do it right so we can end up hosting them so they can take that 3-hour ride. But if we have to do that, then our kids are going to have a mental capacity to understand, like, hey, there's a job that needs to get done and we have to do it at a very, very high level, no matter where we are, whether we're going there, they're coming here, whether we're going to Mizzou, hopefully fingers crossed later on in late November.
Getting athletes to accept that every year, every level gets a little bit harder. You know, it may not be too bad today, but next year we expect more. And then next year we expect more. And then when you get to college, they're going to expect even more out of you. So I know it's a process and you haven't been there that long, but how are you implementing some of these ideas?
That's a great question. Getting our kids to understand that what we did in the past wasn't good enough. There's always going to be a certain level of expectation. They're always going to want more from you, whether it just be us, whether it be, you know, parents, fans, other coaches. You have to be able to rise to that occasion. I think our kids, you know, coming from where a lot of their backgrounds are, they're coming from adverse situations. So they understand, hey, there's always going to be something expected of me. There's always another level to where we're trying to go. We're here. Let's say we're 8-3 this year. Perfect, man. Y'all did a fantastic job. We did what we were supposed to do most of the time. but not all the time, right? So there's another level to it. Can we add on to the successes that we had? And each coach, I believe, does a phenomenal job of getting their unit to understand the ultimate goal, which is obviously making it to that final dance, but also helping these kids understand, like, hey, sports is going to end at some point in time. You know, later on down the road, you become dad, a mom, and things like that. That ties into there's always another level of your personal success, you know, and getting these kids to understand, like, hey, we want you to be great people. We want you to strive to get that promotion in your job. We want you to strive to just be a better overall community leader. So, yes, we are locked into the sport aspect of how jump into that next level and always feeling like you need to get better, feeling like there's another level that we need to achieve and never being satisfied. But we also want them to know that that's going to be life in general. You have to be consistent, and consistency is essentially the key to it all.
Now, taking that a little different direction, meeting the athletes where they're at. You've got a gap you have to bridge. The athletes don't know how to bridge that gap, but you and as an adult have to figure out how to overcome attention spans and motivational factors. And like you said, whatever the demographic of your athlete is at home, family life, whatever that may be, how do you find a way to meet them where they are?
I think that goes back to the relationship factor, right? Each one of these athletes get a chance to talk to pretty much every one of them. I'm not going to say, like, I sat down and spoke to every kid, but I, throughout a certain period of time, I've spoken to every kid that we've had, right? I'm trying to get them to understand who I am as a person, as a coach, and me try to understand who they are as a person and as an athlete. And with that understanding, knowing or trying to find out where those gaps are. And once those gaps are found, and trying to understand, like, how can I bring this kid along? And I think a lot of the time, as I alluded to previously, me coming from the same background as them, they are more receptive of what we have to say. Coach Harris is an alum. A lot of our coaching staff are alums of South. So it's a whole lot easier to kind of bridge that gap of where the kid is, you know, messing up in school or having home problems or, you know, athletically there something's off, and we're trying to bridge that gap and try to figure out how to help this kid be successful. They can easily come to us because we were sitting in the same shoes as them. We were in the same shoes as them. We were sitting in the same classroom. A lot of the same people that we had are still here. So I understand when the kid comes down, like, hey, you know, I had this teacher and she's kind of strict. Yeah, she's been that way for a while. So let me help you navigate this process. But I think relationships has a lot to do with bridging the gaps that a lot of our kids have.
You talked about it a little bit, you know, the kids mimic you and do different things. And, you know, they talk a little trash back and forth on competitive events and different things like that. So letting kids get out there and be themselves without stepping in too much, kind of letting them figure this stuff out, letting them compete. How does that look like in your school?
Coming from the background these kids are coming from, they're naturally competitive. Ray South has had a very rich tradition, as you know, of athletics. And I guess in the beginning, that COVID phase, it kind of fizzed off somewhere. I don't know what happened. You know, the world shut down, so kind of fizzed off. But getting those kids to understand, like, it's okay to compete, it wasn't that hard because they were natural competitors. Now, trying was the thing. Once they tried, that competitiveness came back really, really quick. And once you put those kids in that environment, we have our competition Fridays and any type of competition, like, where we can be running flying teams and you get a kid that hits 20, you know, the next kid comes up, like, I'm about to hit 21. And hits 21, and that kid, like, hey, can I go again? I'm like, nah, give it some time. We got other kids they got to run through here. But it naturally, that natural competitiveness comes out. And we just, I mean, any coach would love that. It's fun and it's enjoyable. And then you get kids calling me out, you know, Yancey, you ain't got it. Yeah, you're right. I don't have no more, my man. You got it. I might race you from here to the 10. If I beat you there, then I'm good. That's a win for me. But it makes the game fun, or it makes the program fun, and it kind of flows into the entire school, because you're not just competing on the field. You're not just competing in athletics. Now you're competing in the classroom. And I think that's where we kind of wanted our athletes to go as well. You're not just an athlete. You're a student athlete, right? So we want you to compete in all aspects of life. Be the best you could possibly be. And with their friends, you know, they're going to say, hey, I got an A on this test. Cool. I got an A on it as well. Was mine higher than yours? So we've had kids who just enjoy competition. And again, it makes me smile to know that, hey, I'm coming back to Raytown South and it's being put back the way it's supposed to be.
In all of your travels and everything you've done, who are your biggest influences?
You know, I have a phenomenal support system at home. I have, you know, my, and you may be talking about influences as far as strength conditioning.
You can take it anywhere you want, man.
Okay. I'll start off with my support system. My amazing wife, my two daughters, and my soon-to-be son. So they've gone through some things with me as far as just being able to understand, like, dad's going to be away for a little bit. When that sports season comes around, and with the multiple sports that I end up working with, I'm gone a lot. So knowing that if I'm going to be gone, I better put my all into what I'm doing and make sure they're getting something out of it. So when I do go home to them, they're pretty proud of me. But on the other side of that, I would say Coach Feely, South Carolina, man, did a great job as far as leading us to that internship program. And he's just been a great, you know, mentor. I can call him up and kind of ask him if I need any questions, if I need anything answered. You know, a couple of those interns that I work with end up becoming strength coaches. So I reach out to them pretty often. I feel like there's a certain point in time, where, you know, like, man, I just don't. When I first started, I thought I was afraid because I didn't know everything everybody else knew. You know what I mean? I feel like there's just so much out there. I was like, man, I just don't know what he knows or what she knows. And once started getting comfortable to start reaching out to people, start asking those certain questions, man, the list can go on and on from those who are able to help or who are able to help. But I appreciate each and every one of them. From, you know, the high school coaches to the collegiate coaches to sport coaches, and anybody who was able to cross paths with me and just, you know, instill some knowledge and give me some uplift and insight, I really, really appreciate it.
Now at Ray South, there's big shoes to fill for the coaching staff. There's been legendary coaches come through there. I want to say, and I could be totally wrong, that some of Coach Carter was based on Bud Lathrop and how he coached, you know, so he made it to Hollywood with some of the things he's done. How do you come in there and do your thing and kind of help keep that tradition going?
Man, that's some massive shoes to fill, Coach Lathrop. I think just based off of what he's built, you know, you get a chance to go in there. I get a chance to go in there every day. The house that Bud built, you know, I get the chance to walk through that gymnasium every day and understand that Raytown South is the students at Raytown South should be proud of where they are. You get to look up in the gym, you see all those banners hanging up. You see all those trophies in the trophy case. I don't think they appreciate it enough because obviously they're young, but the fact that you have a bunch of alumni in the building and we're able to share that knowledge with them and let them know, how rich the tradition that Raytown South has in athletics, I think that's helping continue to grow us and push us in the right direction. Now, as far as me filling those shoes, I'm just trying to do my best, man. But I think our kids deserve to have the best. You know, definitely not saying I'm the best because I'm still learning. I'm just going to give them everything I got. I tell these kids all the time, like, hey, man, I love y'all. I need y'all to believe in me. And I believe in each and every one of y'all. And I think that's been important in the success that we've had because, you know, normally they see you as just a coach, somebody who's trying to bark orders at them or not anybody that's really trying to help. Now, you have those kids who are resistant, but even those kids, you know, eventually follow the rest because we're consistent. You know, everybody on this coaching staff is extremely consistent. We're going to be here every single day. Kids know that. And that's when the traditions start to come back. I wouldn't necessarily say I'm trying to fill those shoes because, man, that's that's something else. But I just want to do my best as to helping Raytown South improve and continue to grow and be one of the best schools in the metro.
Well, Coach, I've had you on here quite a while, but and there's a ton of great coaches in the state of Missouri. But I do feel like the NHSSCA got it right, and you're well-deserving of being the Coach of the Year, and I appreciate all your time.
Coach, I really appreciate you for having me on. Hopefully, I didn't mess up too much.
You did great, man. I think you'll enjoy it when it comes out.
Thank you. Thank you. I do want to give a shout-out to, you know, if I could.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, have at it.
Yeah, like I said, I want to give a shout-out to my wife, my daughters, and my son, my mom, family and friends, and most definitely this coaching staff. And last but never the least are these athletes. Man, it would never work without them, right? These kids are truly amazing. There's just such a passion that I have for, obviously, Raytown South because I came back. But knowing that I've walked the same walk as these kids are walking in the same footprints I was, and helping guide them in the right direction and lead them on to some greater things, man. I appreciate them so much for just showing up every single day. And I appreciate you, Coach, for having me on and allowing me to do this.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Congratulations on the award and many more years of continued success.
Thank you, Coach. I really appreciate it.